1 week from tonight.
He's coming, Mr. Luthor.
It's the network television premiere of Superman.
Any more at home like you?
Not really, no.
Starring Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman, Margot Kidder, and Christopher Reeve as Superman. 1 week from tonight.
Here on ABC.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm going to send you over to my man of steel, Jason Rugard. He'll tell you what's going on.
Oh, thank you there. And you're my Lois Lane all day, every day. Ooh. I should know that. All day. You're my girl Friday. Tonight we're talking. That was a very fitting intro you played there with the TV announcement of the ABC Movie of the Week. I miss those, the big Movie of the Week on Sunday night. Usually something fun. Because we're talking about the Superman movie from 1978, but the extended cut. The 3 hour and 8 minute long, 188 minute long TV cut. And not just the regular one. I think this was originally released in 2 hours and 15, and then, or 2 hours and 23, and then in 2001, they released the extended cut, which was 225 or 230, and now we have one with 45 more minutes. Long. First of all, let's get out
and
of the way.
And this is the oldest of the cuts.
Right? It is. This is the producer's
cut.
Well,
the extended special cuts, yes. Yes, because this was on TV, as we just were saying.
Dragged out over two nights so that they could make X amount more in advertising dollars. It makes sense.
It really is more of a mini series cut, and it does play like a mini series.
Watching it in one view, though, I found this to be tedious.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be a mini series.
Yes.
This is like three movies in one.
It plays like that, too. I didn't realize the movie was this disjointed until I watched it. I haven't seen this, to be fair, in at least 10 years. I haven't seen the original.
Yeah, I don't remember the cuts of the first, second, and third act of the original. I realized when I watched this, because I actually don't know where one of these types of movies, if you will, like the Krypton thing, how long was that in the original?
I've seen this original cut so many times on VHS because friends had it over the years that it's very clear in my head what's extra in this and what's not. There's a lot of extra stuff in that beginning part.
That's what I thought.
That's not the issue. It's later on with the Otis walking in the subway is extremely – that was already a long sequence. I mean, we'll get to some of this other stuff that bloats it. But overall, I think that everything that was cut out of this originally was – it just shows you how important editing is, how vital that is to a film. Because if you include this shit,
it's
terrible.
It's not really terrible. I don't mind this length of this cut, but it needs to then be segregated up into – viewing, into episodes of some sort, right? And if this was presented as a mini series, then this would work. But as you say, watching this in one go is really rough.
It really is. And I held this movie in high regards. The last time I think I sat down and watched this, and I can clearly recall watching this, and this is a strange thing. I was with a group of people, and Netflix was relatively new, and I had gotten the extended cut on DVD, and we watched it the day of September 12th, 2001, right after 9/11. We all had work off, and I had the DVD, and I sat in a room with like four guys I grew up with, and we watched Superman. And it was so, it's, you know what? Because goddamn it, used to be truth, justice, and the American way. I mean, that was like what they used to say. You know what I mean? Like they cut that American way thing out now because it wants to play everywhere across the seas. But it felt very like I remember thinking he's an alien and he chose America to live in. A lot of that kind of stuff at the time, but the movie has reminded me of that.
And along those lines, don't you feel like this is way more of a toned down superhero thing? Like it's very much in regards to what Superman was in the comic books, I guess, leading up to this at the time. But when you compare not only just like the special effects, but the choices of special effects, right? Look at how Superman takes off in this. He's like Peter Pan. When he flies, he's so graceful and everything. And nowadays, when even in the TV shows and stuff, when they have these superheroes flying thing, there's always the big dust cloud. It's like a boom. It's like, they go supersonic and shit. You know, just all that stuff happens. And that is not how this movie was presented. He was never presented as some like badass. He was presented, as you say, as the super good guy, right?
It's a very gentle film as opposed to today's like bombastic.
Right, exactly.
Movies.
But it's far more graceful, I think, really, in the choices of what they chose for him, especially in special effects and fighting and stuff to do, rather than being some big explosion, right?
Well, Peter Pan is probably exactly what they were not trying to emulate, because they wanted you to believe a man can fly.
Well, I was just giving you that an example.
No, but good, you know, I understand what you meant. Yeah, because he is like that, where he kind of drops in and out. He just flies off.
He just floats off so gracefully. I think it's kind of
like
great.
It's very different
than what you would ever see today for someone, if someone's going to take off. You know, it's always like they're taking off like they have explosive gas, you know, just a huge fart and they're gone. You know, it's nuts.
Obviously, the things that have been said about this movie over the years still hold true. Reeves is the perfect choice for the role, as is Margot Kidder. I love Perry White in this movie, the editor there. I mean, all the choices all around in this movie work. A few things I'm still confused about as terms of casting is, why Gene Hackman when you're barely going to use him? He doesn't do a whole lot in this movie.
Yeah, I know. I was a little taken aback by that too, because I remembered, I mean, I really liked Lex Luthor, and I liked Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, and I remember there being more to it.
And we saw more footage, and it's no more adding to the story.
Yeah, not really. He just kind of lounges around. It really doesn't do much.
I thought a lot of the humor that the movie had didn't work this time because the scenes ran long. Like when he brings him the robe in the pool, and a couple of just the little things that were tidy are now sloppy to me in this. And I just could not stop realizing how just sloppy the whole movie played to me. It takes far too long to get anything done in this.
We definitely are in a midpoint between the Batman TV series and the Batman the movie, right? And this is smack dab right in the middle. And it does kind of have that kind of silliness to the Batman TV show. He had a little bit of the seriousness of the Batman movie that would come out, you know, just a little while later.
The Fortress of Solitude sequence in the 45-minute mark is deadly in this movie. I think it kills all momentum.
Really? I liked it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I thought it actually lifted. It lifted me. It got me interested again.
The whole Smallville sequence, I used to be very fond of. And outside of the performance of Jonathan Kent, I think that might be the best on-screen death of all time, up there with The Godfather. I mean, he plays that perfectly. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't do anything for me this time around.
No, I mean, I think the whole first act, however the hell long it is in this, is just too much. The whole Krypton thing's too much, you know. And then to transition into so long of a Smallville story, then to have to wait so long to get to Clark Kent as we want to see him, right? As Christopher Reeves, of course, it takes so long, and it's almost a different movie once that starts. So it's a bit much. And I there's a lot of things that bother me about this movie. Like, why the hell is Jor-El, Krypton's greatest scientist, why is he presenting some sort? Why is he in charge of the trial at the beginning? He's the greatest scientist, not the greatest lawyer or judge, right? What the hell? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm not sure why he was in charge of their banishment, other than that he was part of the council, probably. I'm not really sure. I guess anybody that has knowledge further than us on Superman folklore could tell you there. I did appreciate, though, that they consciously made this the analogy of Christ, with it even looking like the Star of Bethlehem, the ship that sends him off. Those were all artistic touches that were, I don't know.
Not important at all.
at all, but you know, it gives it kind of like this parallel if you're looking for greater themes, maybe, so they didn't just stay towards that Batman TV show. But pre-1989 Tim Burton Batman, this was literally the only superhero we had on the big screen. These four movies that got increasingly worse as they went along. I don't know if you want to dive into the second, third, and fourth, but rank them for me real quick, though. Give me your ranking. Do they go in order for you?
Of all four of them?
Yeah.
No, I'll go, well, shit. Okay, if I really ranked him, I'd probably go 2-1-3-4.
I'd go 2-1-4-3.
Fair enough. 3 and 4 are both shit.
They're both interchangeable shit. They really are. They're misguided. And 2 and 1 are very similar. And I'm going to tell you this. I prefer the television cut, or the non-Donner cut of Superman 2, because it's the one I grew up with. It's the one I taped off television when I was a kid. It's the Richard Lester cut is what I know. So I appreciate that one. When I have the Donner cut and I see what they're doing, for Superman 2 this is, and I don't abide. The dude doesn't abide.
Yeah, I don't care. These movies are so old at this point. I don't know. They don't really play as well as they would have in their day. Anyhow, it's hard to live up to what we currently have, regardless.
Yeah, but they have some state of the art stuff going on in that movie for the time. I mean, that was really, really big, and some of it does look good.
It doesn't
Reeves
hold
flying
up.
The way Reeves flies is still graceful, like you said. The way he touches down.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, and that's a neat choice and everything. But it. That stuff only really – the takeoffs and the landings are good. I mean, the green screen or the – it's not even probably green screen. It's just the backplate.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrendous stuff still. And not to mention what we watched, which was this ABC TV movie. They appeared not to have even done any work on the audio because it sounded like VHS quality audio. I don't know about you.
Bad. Yeah, the mix is bad.
It was a bit rough. Yeah, it felt like I was watching it on ABC, you know, back in – whenever this aired, what was it, 80 something? I don't know.
Yeah, without the bad tracking, my VHS tape.
Right.
And there are lovely touches, though, throughout here, particularly the pre-title sequence with the old comic being read. I love that, you know, that whole idea that brings us into this world. I love that the theater screens open. It's kind of like,
yeah, that was great.
It's very inviting. Like you said, it's a gentle movie.
I like the choices. Like I said, I think these are interesting choices. It only could happen in this time, right? I don't think we'll ever see a movie like this. You could never make a Marvel movie with these choices. You just couldn't, right? It would be so out of place.
Yeah, it would never fly today. No pun intended. Let's take a quick break and listen to the trailer for this film, a short television trailer for the release.
From a doomed planet in a distant galaxy to a fantastic underground hideaway, from the Fortress of Solitude to the bustling city room of the Daily Planet, look up on the screen. It's Superman. Superman, the movie.
I mean, this thing was a massive hit in its day. It was a big gamble, $55 million in 1978, so that's roughly $200 million today dollars. It went on to make adjusted $525 million, $134 million, that is, in 1978 money. At one point, this was on the top 10 highest grossing films of all time. It ranked number 10, so this was up there with the Star Wars and all that kind of stuff of the day, the big, big hits. This was seen widely. Each film subsequently made less and less, although they were still big hits for their time, except for Part 4, which was an absolute bomb and killed the franchise until 2006. But the question is, why was this one the most popular one? Because I think Part 2 is maybe the best superhero sequel they ever made.
Well, this is the first one. I mean, that's just...
You think it's because of the curiosity?
Shouldn't that just be obvious? Well, yeah, what's... What is the most famous Star Wars? It's the first one. It's Episode 4, right? Even though you can say, well, Empire's the better movie. Okay, well, fair enough. But you couldn't really have Superman 2 without Superman 1. You couldn't have Empire without Last Hope, you know? So it just, I don't know. It just doesn't work in a way where you can like the better one more than the first one, right?
All right, I'll give you that. But has there... ever been a more iconic theme by John Williams? And I know he's done a lot of iconic themes. No, I'm telling you, I think this might be his best. And I know we're talking about Indiana
Jones.
You're
talking about his best. You said
Star
most
Wars.
Iconic.
Well, I mean, you hear these three, this beginning of this bars, you know what this is just as fast as you know what
John
Star
Williams
Wars is.
Is so good that I don't think you can pick a best because you have to love them all. I mean... all the way up to new shit, you know, I mean, Harry Potter, I mean, pick any of it, right? They're just, he's so thematic with his music. And so, yeah, this is, he wrote music like this, right, to this movie. Music that you could just play titles over at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. And you would be like, holy shit, yes, right? And that is exactly what this theme song does at the beginning of the movie. And it's just title sequences. It's not even a very good one. They're kind of a little botched here and there, you know? It'll necessarily work all that well with the 3D titles coming through. You're in space and stuff, but with that score, yeah.
That score is magnificent. And it's not just the main theme. The entire score is beautifully done. I listen to it on occasion when I'm doing some writing, and the planet Krypton theme, and there's a lot of like loneliness and solitude in that is very, very good, as long with the triumphant kind of themes. It amongst his best work, I think, and
sure.
certainly deserved to be nominated for an Oscar, which it was in 1978. It did not win, but it was nominated, along with editing for Stuart Baird and sound. So three nominations, no wins, but still legitimized the superhero film and was the first one to come to the screen, so it's seminal.
And now they complain that they don't get, right?
Yeah.
They don't get Oscar nominations.
Well, they didn't even back then. So, because if there was going to be one that would have been nominated for an Oscar, I bet you this could have been up there. I mean, the Best Picture nominees mm-hmm. of 1978 were Heaven Can Wait, The Deer Hunter, right. Midnight Express, Coming Home, and An Unmarried Woman. All very heavy-handed, you could say pretentious films.
Your classic nominations, right?
Right. And they would have no interest and no patience for Superman being nominated. And
it's the same thing that happens nowadays, right?
Yeah, which hasn't changed.
You get the same nominations. Music, right?
The movie's 40 years old. Stuff like that. It's unbelievable that this thing is now 40. And there's a lot of datedness to this outside of just the terminology and a lot of things, the people on the street. And I was watching this thinking, God, I wonder if we're going to look back and look at like Spider-Man Part 1, 2002 version with Tobey Maguire and think, that's so dated. Nobody like no one has an iPhone or is taking selfies in the background with Spider-Man. You know, you just wonder.
I don't know. They still. I mean, that might be a ways off. Then they still do all that stuff.
Do they? You know, I can't recall.
Yeah,
I thought that was later on. Did you catch, by the way, the cameo, the police captain or the guy who was running the cop who was running after Otis, whose partner died? Not the guy who dies, but the other guy is the captain in The Weapon and is in all of Donner's films.
No,
did you recognize him?
Not even notice.
The guy who's always suspended in Riggs and Murtaugh.
I didn't. I was not paying attention.
Yeah, and I'm like, God, this guy looks familiar. Then I had to look it up, and then of course, that's what comes up. We can't get away without talking about.
Oh, you're right. That is that guy.
Of course it is. He's also in Assassins in the very beginning.
Yeah, you're right.
A bunch of Donner films. We got to talk about Reeves here. Outside of the great casting and the tragedy that fell to him. Would this have worked with anybody else in the role?
Anyone knowing? No, don't think so.
You know who tried out for this, from Stallone to Reynolds to Redford.
And I'm sure many, many more, right, will go unnamed, right? But, yeah, you got to pick the right Superman. It's something that, you know, I question now if they have the right one. Because he kind of works sometimes, but sometimes I really don't think so. And I thought they had one there in 2006, but it did not work out.
Yeah, without throwing Cavill under the bus, because I don't mind him.
What I'm saying. I go back and forth. He's good sometimes as Superman. He's like, oh, yeah, okay, this is Superman. And then another scene, I'll be like, he's kind of not really that great.
I don't know. I think that Routh was given a bum shot, to be honest.
Brandon Routh was a better movie. Superman, I thought. Or he embodied, he looked and acted like I would think Superman would look and act way more than Henry Cavill.
But he'll be known as like the George Lazenby of Superman's.
Yeah.
The guy who was just in the one-off. Yeah. It didn't work for whatever reason. Is there a Superman curse? Do these guys get cursed? You think that there's something going on with these dudes? That their careers are done. I don't mean like a curse as in like bad things.
Well, I don't know. Stuck. When does the curse take place? Because, I mean, Nicolas Cage, right? That clearly cursed, right?
So you think just by getting casted as Superman, he got cursed?
He wore the suit and everything. I mean, is that enough?
Okay, I'm kind of feeling what you're saying right now because that was like, what, 99? And that's, or 98? Right. And that started becoming like their era, like... Yeah, well, 98 is still popular. I'd say Cage is probably still relevant until 2000.
Well, that's fair enough, but so maybe it got on him a little bit, you know.
Oh, the
he's a little
Stardust.
Stinky, and then it kind of the just built
off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of another one of these guys. Guys complain about being James Bond and having a negative effect on their careers, but Craig still seems to do movies. Brosnan's still doing movies.
Well, let's track where their careers would be. Where do you think their careers would be had they not been in the role? You know, and I can tell you right now, it would be jack shit nowhere. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't think doing these things hurt anybody.
Craig would still be playing the second fiddle to anybody in supporting roles like he was doing most of his career. All right, remember the merchandising they had for this kind of stuff? No, probably not, because they didn't. This was 1978, and they didn't have a lot of stuff going on back then. They didn't recognize the power of merchandising until – I mean, Star Wars had tapped into it, but
– Star Wars was just starting, right? And that was only a year before this.
Correct, correct. So I think by 1983, they probably had it up and running, and there was a various toys and cartoons on. But this is what people were settled with when you wanted something Superman-related.
Luthor has Superman trapped. He's using kryptonite to destroy his powers.
Now you'll tell me why Superman peanut butter tastes so great.
Never. So fresh roasted, so creamy, so yummy. Then its secret will be mine, all mine. I foiled again! Just wait, Superman. I'll find out.
Superman peanut butter. Its strength is its great taste.
It's like Popeye spinach, right? Superman peanut butter. That makes sense, right? Yeah.
Well, didn't they have Peter Pan peanut butter to go back
they
to your
did,
previous
They did. They did. Yeah, there you go. They knew.
So what was the idea of putting Superman in peanut butter? Like, hey, kids, drink your Ovaltine. I mean,
yes,
what's going
exactly.
On?
That's all they can do back in the day, right? It was always food-related stuff.
There's all these GMOs. We didn't even know. I think that Superman was probably and still is possibly my favorite superhero. I mean, Batman was very influential to me as a kid, too.
I know. I go back and
Superman was always my guy, and I just still think he hasn't been done on the screen since Reeves left.
Well, I even think that I would like an update, because I don't think these really have stood the test of time. They were just a little bit too early to really have made an impact that would last, you know?
Yeah.
Even though everyone says, even the guys at McMarvel, everyone says to go back and watch this for Superman, not this cut we watched, but the actual theatrical cut, Superman, to get an idea of what a perfect superhero movie would be like. And I kind of agree with that. I get what they're going for, but it's clearly very flawed in comparison to today's movies. And it just doesn't necessarily hold up entirely. So, yeah, I would like a refresh, but a real refresh, not like not what we've been getting, Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman. I don't want that stuff.
Yeah, what's ironic about that is that there's an online conversation on YouTube, you can check it out, where Christopher Nolan is interviewing Richard Donner about and telling and just gushing about Superman, how it was a textbook film for him when he was looking at Batman Begins and looking to write it and how to enter the universe, which is strange. One, because Batman Begins is so much different from it tonally and even from a narrative standpoint. Two, it goes full circle now and we have a Superman movie imitating the Batman Begins template that is nothing like what we have. And, you know, it's like this strange clusterfuck we're now in that we just want to unscrew and just get a nice – but then again, we had the gentle version of Superman, and that was Superman Returns, and that was flat out boring. It's just flat out boring. That movie just bores me.
In comparison, though, to the stuff, to the other stuff, it's not that. It's not as bad as it once appeared. But I will agree with that. It's not a good movie. There's a reason that didn't go forward. And so there's still, I still think you can do something similar to that. You know, it just has to be good. Unfortunately.
I don't know what the next step would be. I think they've worked themselves into such a corner.
They're
going to
keep going with what they got, right? Yeah. They only got Affleck for like one more movie, right? I mean, I don't know. They seem like they're way more screwed than Marvel was ever. So,
yeah, and the reign of Superman is one of the many storylines that was out there that they could have gone and looked at. The death of Superman, they tried already, and then they kind of dismissed that. So they made so many errors that and possibilities are open for them, and they just see. Fucking stepping on their dicks.
Well, I don't understand why Superman is not some Batman character, right? It's a DC comic, fine, but he doesn't fit in with the other characters. He's like the Spider-Man of their universe. It should be fucking fun. Why can't you make a Spider-Man like movie with Superman? I don't understand how that's hard.
Well, they haven't seen him do it yet. And the problem is he lacks vulnerability. I mean, there's really only X amount of things.
That's not true. He does. That's what this entire movie is about, is his vulnerability. Right, and it's the same vulnerability that every single superhero has. to the people he loves.
Yeah, right. Always, yeah. That's the soft spot. And Lex Luthor in this, as always, is a real estate magnate. Yeah. I don't understand right. how.
He's got a real estate scheme going on. He's going to get some land. He's going to get it.
Got some money? Want to buy some land?
My pappy always said, get yourself some land, boy.
I mean, he does say that, so it is set up. But still,
it's a bit boring, really.
It is. The whole, him and Otis, it's too much. Test Marker is a useless character in this. It really is. And
a lot of the people are really useless, right? I mean, Lois Lane and really Superman Kent, you know, and I suppose his father to some degree, but even the Krypton stuff, like all of it's pretty much useless except for Lois Lane and Clark Kent, right? It's all just kind of like noise in the background.
So I'm taking it you didn't enjoy this version.
It just seems to have fallen apart a little bit for me.
It definitely fell apart. It's fallen apart at the wheels.
Maybe it's this version. This is just too long. It's just too much.
There's movies from this era that I can go back and I still find precious. Like I can hold Rockies and that kind of stuff up to a
certain
point.
That's fair enough. Rocky, I think, holds up way better than this, though.
It was not as dependent on things of its time to tell its story, and this movie is.
That's true. This movie is also very set oriented. You know, like Rocky's like filmed in real places.
Yeah.
This is filmed clearly on sets. I mean, that's what I mean. This movie looks really fake. This movie looks like a movie from the 50s or 60s. This looks like a decade earlier of a film. You know,
some of the miniatures are terrible.
It looks very Hitchcockian and like just the feeling of the special effects and of the sets and things. It just looks like something from another era.
Well, I guess we made a mistake by going back and checking out this one because neither of us like this. And cumulatively, we spent about 6.5 hours watching this thing. So that was definitely a mistake on our part there. But still, I guess it's always good to hear that John Williams score blasting away.
And it was nice to see Christopher Reeves and to see a different type of superhero movie, right? I mean,
yeah, especially
I'm
with
all the superhero
movies.
That's good. Yeah. Yes.
Surrounded by as of late. This is definitely a different tone of it. Well, that's going to wrap up our podcast for tonight. We want to thank you guys for joining us as always. You can check out our back catalog.
Cadillacs.
It's kind of like a podcast you can listen to when you're driving around.
In your Cadillac.
There you go. The catalog, too, of podcasts over there on MovieMavericks.com. Stitcher, we want to say hi to you guys. iTunes, everywhere else that's listening to us. Remember to rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening to. And check us out next week. We'll be back with a new show, reviews for Deadpool 2 and Solo. All right, guys. Talk soon.